So all things work together for good then, as I was indicating in my praise. It's been part of our conversation on a Monday night. When we meet to pray on a Monday, we often spend a lot of time talking about the sermons of the Sunday before, talking about what we've been thinking about and hearing on a Sunday. And for the past two Mondays, we've asked the question, if all things don't work together for good, then what hope is there? I think all of us are very mindful of the difficulties, the tragedies that many of us have experienced in the congregation. And it must be very difficult to hear that all things work together for good. And one of the things I'm very grateful for is the fact that for many of you who've had terrible, awful, heartbreaking things happen, you're still here, and you're still here listening to such truth as all things work together for good. It's not easy, but I think that what we have to remind ourselves is that this is where our hope is found, that we have a God who is working all things together for good. And we haven't said it yet, but we will, that individual things are far from good. Individual things may be very painful. In the story of Joseph, they were individual things that you could never describe as good. But what we're trying to do, and I think sometimes we do a better job of it on a Monday than we do on a Sunday, we are trying to see how God works together. So the two ideas are God working these things, and he works them together. So there's not a case of one thing, and we just think about one thing. It's all things, and it's all things together. So I'm glad we're here, and I'm glad we're able to hear this truth again. We saw last Sunday, as we started the story of Joseph, that the sort of things God uses are quite random things, like an overheard conversation. The guy that Joseph meets in the field, he overheard the brothers talking about carrying on with their journey, looking after the flock. And Joseph randomly meets this guy in a field when he can't find his brothers. So the things that God uses for good are often quite random, unexpected, trivial, tiny, insignificant things. We also saw last Sunday that one of the things that God uses are relationships. So we talked about fathers and sons. And Jacob was the exactly right father, with all his jealousies and favoritisms, that was needed for the good to be achieved. And so we drew from that, that whatever father you had, and whatever he was like, is exactly the right father in the purposes of God to bring you to good. And we saw last Sunday that the brothers hated Joseph. And so we talked about the relationships within families. And one of the things that God is working together for good are the relationships in our families. Now, they don't have to be good relationships for God to work them together for good. Joseph's relationships weren't good, but God used them for good. And so in the same way, God will use the relationships in our families. Whether they're good or bad in themselves, God will use them for good. And then the third thing we talked about last Sunday was matters of the heart. So you've got anger, hatred, jealousy. God works emotions like jealousy and hatred and anger and lies and good old Jacob's misery and despair. God can use all that, works all that together for good. What I want us to do this morning is carry on with the story as we come to Potiphar's house. And whoever writes Genesis, you know, Moses, whoever it is very deliberately telling you the story that all things work together for good. And one of the ways the author does it is in the structure of his storytelling. And what I would like to do, I can't do it here, it just doesn't work in a sermon. I'd like to show you the structure of chapter 39, because it's a wonderful structure. It really is. And I guess what I'll do is I'll talk to you about it tomorrow in prayer meeting instead. The structure is wonderful. And just by looking at the shape of the chapter, you can learn so many things. I'll tell you one or two things about the structure. And then the way that the author tells the story of of Joseph in Potiphar's house is also absolutely staggering. We think we know it. And what I hope at the end of this morning is that those of you who think you know the story of Joseph will have changed your mind. Because the way the story of Potiphar's house is told, and we look at the story, is wonderful, truly is. And then we'll finish up with a phrase that you'll see twice in this chapter. Many phrases are repeated, but there's one on which we'll end, and we'll see what we make of that. So let's start with a word about structure. And some of you will know that especially when you're reading your Old Testament, you look out for certain things. So I've already given you a clue. One of the things you look out for are repeated words or phrases. Now, this chapter is filled with repetition. And perhaps tomorrow we'll just take a look at how often you get repeated phrases. You also need to look out for dialogue. So let me ask you a question. I don't think you'll shout out the answer. You can if you want. As you look at chapter 39... notice who's silent in this chapter. In the account of this house, who says nothing at all? And of course, once you notice who's silent, you're immediately on the right path of making sense of this story. And so, of course, who's silent, who doesn't say a word, is Potiphar. Why don't we have any of the words of Potiphar in this chapter? He's the master of the house. He's the most important person in the house. And yet we don't have one word of his recorded. Why is that? And as you go to the end of the chapter, of course, the other silent person is the master of the prison. Why doesn't he say anything? Why do we have not a hint of his conversation? But what we do get is a detailed account of Mrs. Potiphar and what she says. So what's really key to this account is what does Mrs. Potiphar say? And how does she say it? And what does she repeat in her account of what she says happens? So it's really interesting that you've got this account of a woman and her dealings with Joseph. So, look out for repetition, look out for dialogue. How does the chapter begin? And one of the things we talked about on Monday is the fact that the story of Joseph is a story of down and then up. It's not a story of ups and downs. The story of Joseph is a story of downs and ups. And of course, the chapter begins with Joseph going down into Egypt. Now, my geography's hopeless, but I'm sure all of us understand, don't we, that to go south, which is what he did, isn't to go down. You don't go down. If you went down, you'd go into the ground, I suppose. What the author is telling us is the story of Joseph is a story of down. So he went down into a well. He goes down into Egypt. He goes down into prison. It's a story of all these downs. And the downs are much more significant than the ups. And the only app that really matters is the last app, when he's the prime minister of Egypt. But the story is essentially one of down. Now, you may forget all I'm saying, but don't forget this. God works the downs and the ups in the life of a Christian to bring about the good. So one or two of you already told me your week was up and down, not down and up. Well, if you had an up and down week or a down and up week, God works the downs and ups and ups and downs. He works them together for the good of his people. So the story starts with a down. And then just to sort of give you an idea, we won't talk a great deal about it, but what the author wants us to do is to compare the first couple of verses of the chapter with the last couple of verses with the chapter. So those of you who will be in prayer meeting tomorrow, here's your homework. Compare the opening, say, five verses of this chapter with the closing five verses. So as Joseph meets Potiphar, compare that to as Joseph meets the prison governor. And what you'll see beyond any doubt are the repeated phrases. The Lord was with Joseph. Joseph was successful. That's what you'll see on both accounts. You'll have the idea that he found favor. Joseph found favor with Potiphar, first of all, and then he found favor with the prison governor. So you see that you've got those repeated phrases. It's almost like you've heard the story of Joseph with Potiphar, then he goes down into prison, and then it's like, here we go again. Exactly the same when he's in prison. It's almost identical in structure. The account of him in prison and the account of him in Potiphar's house. Now, we'll talk more about that tomorrow, but I just want you to notice as we think about things this morning, and we'll sort of swat up tomorrow together. Let me show you another thing. Just take a look, if you will, at these verses. Now, I'm not going to read them out. I want you just to scan them briefly in your Bibles. So look at verses 7, 11, 15, 18, and 19. 7, 11, 15, 18, 19. Just have a quick look at those verses. And as you look at them, I don't want you to jump in to the verse and get out all its meaning. We don't do that. We don't go in feet first into our scripture. We kind of have a little look to begin with. So just take a look, 7, 11, 15, 18, 19. And what I hope you see as you take a very quick look is you'll see things like, and it happened. So it was. And so it was. And it happened. And it came about. And it was like this. You're getting the writer is getting you to have a sense that it just happened. So it was. It came about. One of those things. And can you see that that's very deliberate in the storytelling? Because the author is emphasizing how one thing moves into another thing. How one thing that God works melds into another thing that God works. And then that then takes shape in another thing that God works. So that you have these things all holding together. They may be random. They may be connected. They may not be connected. They may happen one minute and the next is a month later or an hour later. It's this sense that you get, I suppose, of a shower curtain. It's all the hooks holding something together, causing something to hang. And that's what you notice as you read these verses. So it was, so it happened. Now just take a note of that, and we'll say more about it tomorrow. So the structure then, repetition, who's silent? What are these phrases that keep occurring? How one little bit is very similar to another little bit. How you get that sense of deja vu as you read the story because it's so similar. Put all that together and you've got a very deliberate account of how God works all things together for good. So let's spend a moment with the story. And as you're guided now by what I've told you so far, you're guided by the fact you're looking out for repetition, you're looking out for dialogue, you're noticing who's silent. Let's take a look at the story. And the story is about a woman, Mrs. Potiphar. And the story is how she, now what word do we use? The author says she cast longing eyes on Joseph. The story of this woman is of sexual desire for a young man. And she persists in her strong feelings. And then you get this idea of Joseph, 17 years old, or however he is now. He's not that old. And he's got some sense of God. Now, we don't know how much of a sense of God he's got. And I don't want you to get distracted at the moment with the phrase, the Lord is with Joseph, and all that he did prospered, because we'll talk about that again. But he's got some sense of God, and so he holds out. Now, it's something very, very important that we need to say at this point. Joseph is second in command in Potiphar's house. He has complete authority over everything in the house. The only thing that Potiphar has held back from Joseph is Mrs. Potiphar. So she's the one area where Joseph cannot go. That's very clear in the storytelling. So out of loyalty to Potiphar, he says no, as well as out of loyalty to God. She persists. And then, and this is wonderful, isn't it? It's absolutely wonderful. Then one day, everything seems to fall into her lap, kind of thing. There's just one moment on one day where just by chance and just through sheer bad luck, Joseph's in the house doing his work and there's no one else in that house at that moment. Now that's so unusual that the writer draws attention to it. Usually a house like Potiphar's would be busy. And there'd be slaves everywhere, there'd be business going on, trading going on. It's just a hive of activity. But this one moment, nothing's there, everyone's out, Joseph's on his own in the house, and she says, this is my chance. Now, how often in your life and mine does it just seem to us that we're in the wrong place at the wrong time? That is just sheer bad luck that something's happened to us. Can you believe it, we say? This thing that I never thought, that I never expected, there it was. How are the chances, you'd say? Now, that's what happens to Joseph. And she comes along and she fully expects Joseph to be obedient. And, of course, he isn't. And you get this very dramatic, and it's almost something easy to imagine how, you know, she sort of makes her approach and she perhaps reaches out and holds on to his clothes and he struggles to break free and he runs out, and he would have been naked, of course, as he runs out of the house. And then she's left with his clothes in her hand, and it's like for a moment everything's just quiet. And as she holds this in her hand, she suddenly has the idea that she can bring about Joseph's downfall. And so you can almost visualize it. She's with this bit of cloth and she suddenly starts to scream. Now this is minutes later. She lifts up her voice, she tells us, and she tells us that twice. She lifts up her voice and she cries out with a loud voice. And of course, what she would cry, I guess, would be the equivalent today of rape. And as she cries, all the servants from wherever they are come rushing into the house to see what's wrong. And she immediately starts telling the story in a very particular way. So just look at the way she tells the story. And I want you to notice, as we do so, some of the repetitions. So here's the story that she begins to tell. So we're in verse 14. She called to the men of her house and spoke to them, saying, "See, he," now who's he? Look at the verse, who's he? "He has brought in to us a Hebrew to mock us." Who's she talking about? And of course she's talking about Potiphar. "He has brought into the house a Hebrew to mock us." So she is complaining about, to the servants, her husband, who is also their master. Go back to the verse. "He came in to me to lie with me, and I cried out with a loud voice. And it happened when he heard that I lifted my voice and cried out, that he left his garment with me and fled and went outside." Now, we'll say more about it tomorrow, but just notice that. And then go down to verse 17. "Then she spoke to him with words like this." Isn't that wonderful? So Potiphar's arrived now, and she speaks to Potiphar with words like this. What's that about? What's going on there? What's the author telling you to notice? She spoke with words like this. What does she say? Let's take a look. "The Hebrew servant whom you brought into this house came in to me to mock me. And so it happened," there's that phrase again, "so it happened as I lifted my voice and cried out that he left his garment with me and fled outside." Now it's virtually a repetition of what she said to the servants. "You brought him into this house and he did this to mock us." What is she saying? What is she accusing? Who is she accusing? Well, of course, she's accusing her husband. "You brought him here. You have brought him here. And you brought this Hebrew here to mock us." Now, the word mock, wonderful word, it's used twice, you can see it. It's a word that means to imitate. And what she's saying is, Joseph, you brought him into this house. He's supposed to be a servant, but you brought him into this house, and he's imitating. He's imitating you, Potiphar. You've given him everything. You've put him in charge of the whole lot. You don't know a thing about what he's doing. All you are concerned about is what you have to eat. He's managing everything in this house, and you've done this, and he even thought, because he thinks he's you, he even thought he could have his way with me. That's what she's saying to her husband. And as you look then at his response, we haven't got any of his words, but look at his response in verse 19. "So it was, when his master heard the words which his wife spoke to him, saying," and here it is again, "your servant did to me after this manner, that his anger was aroused." So who's Potiphar angry with? He's got this account from his wife of how he had brought Joseph into the house. Joseph has got too big for his boots. He's risen above his proper station. He now thinks that he's got everything in the house. He can do as he wish. And he even tried it on with me. Now, we said last Sunday that she could have, you know, whatever, with any of the servants. That didn't matter. And in a sense, if a servant refuses the advances of his master or mistress, then that servant is just dispatched. So it's no big deal. Really, you see, what could have happened here is they just get rid of Joseph. But it becomes this account of how she holds him, Potiphar, responsible. She's angry with him. And so I want you to think about Potiphar's response and his anger. Who's he angry with then? And then you get this account of him going down, taking Joseph to the prison. Do you notice then how the story's told? Now, I think time is gone, so let's just make sure that we look at some of the lessons that we can learn from this about how God works. First of all, in these repeated phrases, you got the phrase, the Lord was with Joseph. And it's really important then to take from the story the idea that through all things, God is with his people. So the downs and the ups and the chance happenings, the Lord is with his people. So all the things that your life and mine is made up of, relationships and emotions and chance and bad luck, the Lord is with his people. So we can take that from this passage. But look at that verse. It's twice, I think, isn't it, that we get the Lord was with Joseph. Do you notice, and it's very difficult to spot it, but once you do, it's very obvious that you get the word and. The Lord was with Joseph and he was a successful man. They're two separate things, and too often we've made them one. The Lord was with Joseph, and so therefore Joseph was successful. The Lord was with Joseph in Potiphar's house, and so he was successful. And the Lord was with Joseph in prison, and so he was successful. It's not like that at all. They are separate things. The Lord was with Joseph, that was a constant. And separate to that now, additionally, on top of that, as well as, he was successful. See, the Lord can be with you, but that doesn't mean you'll be successful. And I'm sure if you just take a moment to think about that, you'll agree with me, won't you? We are not these people who say that there's wealth and success and happiness because the Lord is with us. If only that were the case. You can have some success. You may be very successful. You may be completely unsuccessful. But the Lord is with you. Hey, the Lord is with his people. It's an additional thing that Joseph was successful. It just seems to be his own particular, I don't know, skill set, I suppose. Now, what Potiphar does is he observes how, from the beginning, Joseph seems to be good as a servant or a slave. He's a very good slave. And so we'll see again tomorrow what it means when Potiphar says he saw that the Lord was with him and that he was successful. We'll see more about that this tomorrow. But I want you to be clear that those are two separate things, and Potiphar observes both of them, okay? So the Lord is with us in our downs and in our ups. He's with us in all the things we've described. And as you think of Joseph for a moment, you've got the idea of rape, a false accusation. You've got the idea of imprisonment, false imprisonment. And these are the things, imagine that, God can use, God works, false accusations of rape, and God works imprisonment for the good that he is taking us all to. These are some of the things that God uses. But to end, I want you to notice that verse that says, for Joseph's sake. Can you see it there? Verses 4 to 6 and 21 to 23. And what you've got here, I think, is a wonderful place to end this morning. Because of Joseph, for Joseph's sake, God blessed Potiphar, and God blessed the governor of the prison on account of Joseph. And that on account of, for Joseph's sake, is a technical term. And the New Testament says much more about on account of. So draw two lessons from for Joseph's sake. God bless Potiphar and the governor. Two lessons. I'm sure most of you will come up with the first. The first lesson is this. On account of Joseph, others were blessed. We saw 2 weeks ago that Joseph is central to the story of how God gets the Hebrews from Israel into Goshen. How he gets a family from the north down into the south. It's central. Joseph is at the heart of God's purposes. And we saw that Christ, Joseph is a type of Christ, and Christ is at the heart of how God gets us from sinners into glory. Christ is the one through whom, on account of whom, God brings us to glory. And so we have the New Testament telling us that Jesus comes down from heaven. He comes down into our world. He comes down to be a slave. He goes down to the cross. He goes down into hell. Jesus Christ comes and on our behalf has this journey of down. And it's on Christ's account. It's for Christ's sake that God then will bless his people. On behalf of Christ, like it was for Joseph, you and I will be brought to the land of glory. So that's your first lesson. But let me be brave enough to offer you a second. And some of you are going to find this rather difficult to believe. We've often asked, haven't we, what's the good? All things work together for good. And so we've said good is the land of Goshen in the story of Joseph. Good is glory in the Christian experience. Good is heaven. Good is eternity. Absolutely right. But I'm sure Potiphar, for a while at least, thought his luck was in by having Joseph in his house. For Potiphar, it was good to have Joseph there. And then for the prison governor, it was good that Joseph was a prisoner because he did all the organizing and all the planning. He ran the place. And the governor would have said, it's good, isn't it, that we've got Joseph here? Do you see the second lesson here? This phrase, for Joseph's sake. The people of God are a good to those who are around them. You are a good to your family. You are a good to your neighbours. You don't have to do anything. You just are. On account of you, you are a good to your colleagues. You are part of God's goodness to the world as a whole. And just by doing your stuff, being yourself, wherever you are and wherever you're placed, you are a good to those all around you. And I think we need to see it. We need to see that we are a good because we are God's people and the Lord is with us through our downs and ups. And we may be successful, we may not. That's a secondary point. We may or we may not, but nonetheless, through us and on account of us and because of us, God brings good into the world. And we are a good to all those we come into contact with. Christ is a good to us, and we therefore are a good to each other. Let's pray then, shall we?